This is Where Did the Road Go? Our aim is to explore the fringe, to be true skeptics and question openly, to investigate the paranormal, bring light to the dark corners of history, and give a voice to the shunned of science. We deal in mystery and the important questions that these subjects bring to light. What is reality? Who are we? And why are we here? Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com for a full show archive, links to all our social media, upcoming schedule, and much, much more. Now, join your host Soraya on this week's edition of Where Did the Road Go?
Welcome to the show. This week, I'm airing the third part of the interview with Jeff Ritzman, the final part. There's a little extra piece I'm going to be putting up for patrons this week. Meant to do it by now, haven't had a chance. Possibly two pieces, actually, but definitely one. I want to thank everyone, too. Thank everyone listening and everyone who's contacted me to comment on the show and shoot us information and stories. I think we almost have enough stories to do another listener story show. We got a lot of cool stuff coming up, and I want to thank everyone for the support because it does mean a lot. And without you guys, this show probably wouldn't have kept going. Also, I want to thank everyone who came to Fort Fest last weekend. That was the first time I did an actual presentation, and I got a great response, and I thank everyone for that. I had to rush through it a little bit. They will be up eventually. I'm going to put them up for patrons first, and then I'll probably put them up publicly in a while. There's a little after Fort Fest piece that Mike, myself, and Joshua did, and you can find that on the YouTube. All right, without any more delay, this is the final part of the interview with Jeff Ritzman. Now, you know, you did have another experience with someone in a, was it a cloak?
Yeah. Well, here's where everything blows. Your audience is now saying, well, I was with this guy until this.
Well, you know, this part, what it reminded me of when I heard you talk about it on Project Archivist, It reminded me of Streber's Key.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I mean, it's different, but there are some experiences he's related, not even just the key, that are very similar to this.
I think the only thing that I can say about this is that I kind of file this away, and I was always somewhat suspicious of it, even the effect that it had on me at the time. Life is never so good when you have something that every once in a while scares the bejesus out of you. And one day it comes to you and says, that's over. Like, it's going to be good from here on out. And it is. There's nothing better in life than that. I can tell you that. Nothing. I mean, that'll put you on a cloud. Like, it's over. Whatever it was, I got through it, and now I've gotten to the good part. Like, I'm finally going to get the ice cream sundae, right? And then at some point, you know, you realize that ice cream sundae is made out of styrofoam and doesn't taste good and you don't really want it around anymore and it obliges you, you know? But yeah, I mean, this gets really long and involved and I don't, you know, I was awoken one night out of my bed and it, again, I was asleep and I was awake. I heard somebody and I opened my eyes and there was a very large man standing in the doorway to my bedroom. And I, like most people, threw my feet over the bed to get up and run at him or run out of the room or something. And he put his hand up as if to say stop and everything just melted away from me. Now this was, I can say that there was that we've talked about the kind of weird kind of altered state that you feel in this situation. Well, that was there, but not quite as overbearing as a buzzing or a something like that. This was very calm. I mean, very calm, like ridiculous. And I just saw, oh, okay, that's fine. I followed him down the stairs. Long story short, I am somehow maneuvered into a position where I'm sitting cross-legged on the floor with him. He's very real. I mean, he's very, very there. To the point where my dog smelled him and ran away. But she saw him, didn't bark, had ears down, and was curious, but curious enough just to take a sniff and then run back upstairs. And he could, he just talked. I mean, he was not satisfied, oddly enough, until we were sitting cross-legged on the floor, and he wasn't satisfied until our knees were touching. He wore a black, one sheet of black material, very black. The material seemed to have a quality to it that seemed like granular static, to sort of an overlay of a staticky look to it. Very hard to explain what that felt like or seemed like it was made of something other than material. And it covered most of his eyes and nose. It covered down to about the bridge in his nose. You could see his mouth. You could see his chin, you know, the cheeks. He looked young. It was hard to tell age, but again, that feeling of very old was very much there. But there was also this smell of pine and grass and water and rain, like all kind of mixed together. Very, I don't know, earthy, I guess, smells. And he talked like a person. I didn't hear it in my head. He started out talking like a person, and every once in a while it would gravitate into my head and then back out again, through a couple of different experiences. I don't mean to be vague about it, but I think most of the first discussion we had was about me, about why I am the person I am, and why I do the things I do, and how I view things, and how I viewed my family, and why I was angry at certain people. And it was very introspective, which was kind of weird. But the first things that he said to me was, I said, "Are you one of them?" And he kind of snickered. And he said, "Your human experience with this is about to change." And, you know, it wasn't going to be scary aliens and all of that. And that was kind of gone over about why it was scary. And, you know, "You're really thick," he says. "You're really hard to reach." I didn't know if he meant me, or I took it as me, but because I was slightly offended at that. But meanwhile, I'm just kind of dreamy at this guy. I'm just kind of looking at him and I'm going, "Wow, you know, like, this is really happening. I'm really sitting here on the floor." And, you know, like, again, those common thoughts, like, "I should wake my wife up." Like, that doesn't happen. You just sit there and you listen to what's being said to you. And, you know, and there were some personal, you know, things that were said to me that really cracked my egg. And it wasn't anything that would benefit anybody else. But at the end of it, you know, I got up and he made me open the door for him and he walked down the street. That was it. And I was told, "This is not for public consumption." I was told, "This is not something that needs to be talked about publicly yet." And I said, "Okay." And consequently, I tried to talk about it because I was so blown away by what had happened. I went back upstairs. I got in bed. I went to sleep. I woke up the next morning and I was completely, I guess the word Jeremy uses for me was, I was completely blissed out. And when I called him to tell him about it, he goes, "You're even talking different. Like, you're talking really slow and really calm." Like, I wasn't worried about anything. And again, it wasn't like I was high or drunk or anything like that. It was just this feeling of inner calmness, peace. You know, like, I finally had some sense of peace about things. And that would wane away over the course of maybe 3 or 4 days. It would start to, like, the world would start to intrude again, right?
Right.
And this person would show up every now and then out of usually at late hours, usually when I was getting ready for bed. I came out of my guitar room one day, and he walks out of a back bedroom, and I nearly jumped out of my skin. I said, you've got to stop doing this. But you got to understand that for me, this was like, the best way to describe it is, I felt like finally in this ocean of weird crap, I finally have something that's there that feels like a friend and wants to teach me something. And I'm all about learning whatever he wants to show me.
Right.
And I'm trying to, and I, so some other stuff went on and I tried to talk about it on the show with Jeremy. And, at one point I was outside because that's one of the things he told me to do is to go outside and sit quietly and just listen and we'll be able to communicate better that way, whatever that means. So I'm going out sometimes at night, sitting in the backyard and just listening, and I don't hear anything, I don't see anything. But I went out one night after me and Jeremy had recorded this bit of telling people what I had experienced with this man, and all of a sudden I'm looking at the ground, all of a sudden I'm looking up at the tops of the trees in my backyard, and something has me slammed up against the gazebo door that we have in the backyard, and I hear the words "why" audibly, and it lets loose of me, and I get up and I run inside and I'm freaking out. I call Jeremy and I say, there's no way we can air this. You've got to erase it because something just threw me up against the shed and wants to know why I'm talking. So the next night we try again, and I try to be more vague about it. I'm trying to describe it without really describing it. I'm trying to say, I think this is okay. I feel like I'm okay saying this. And I try to describe some more. And that night, I wake up to the feeling of like I'm in a slap fight with somebody. it's not my wife, but it's off to the side of the bed, and it feels like a lot of little hands like slapping. It doesn't hurt particularly. It's just kind of like I wake up, I feel it, and then it's gone. But I clearly saw something moving. And then it wasn't there. And I got up and I looked and I didn't see anything. I went back to sleep. I wake up in the morning. And when I first woke up in bed, I got up and my back felt funny. And it was really hot. And it felt sticky. And the air was on, so I don't know why it would feel that way. So I went downstairs and Lisa was getting ready in the bathroom. And I said, will you do me a favor? Look at my back. I said, it feels like I'm sunburned. And I lifted up my shirt, and immediately she goes into hysterics. You're too far into this again. You've got to back away from this. You need to get out of this subject again. You know, this is ridiculous. And she starts grabbing cotton balls and Band-Aids, and I literally look like I've been whipped.
Wow.
I've got lacerations on the lower end of my back that probably should have had stitches, or at least one that should have had probably been stitched shut because I got a scar there from it. But that was it. I did not talk about it. We did not air that show. We never, you know, that was it. No.
How long ago was this?
Oh, my God. It was during Paratopia, so 3 or 4 years ago maybe or more.
Okay. And was this before or after the crystal incident?
That would be before.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah. That was before that.
So what changed that allowed you to talk about this to some degree?
this is where it all goes south. you know, as if this isn't, I mean, again, I wouldn't believe this, but I can't deny it happened. All I ever thought to myself about it was, it seems like a good thing. If I get to talk about it at some point, that's great. But he certainly doesn't seem out to hurt me. Like, this is not meant to scare me. Even though, to look, if you were there, walked in the room right behind you right now, you would go, oh, crap, you know, no. Because I did notice, I think the second or third time that I saw him, I was in the hallway and I was walking behind him on level ground. And he was every bit of 7+ foot tall. Like, he was extraordinarily tall. And I hadn't really picked up on that the first time for some reason. I just didn't. But I was close to him walking by, and I was like, wow, really big. But then, you know, I woke up one night, and oddly enough, I woke up in the kitchen, and I was searching for notepads. I wake up into this. Okay? This is where this is where it starts. I can explain that. I must have been just exhausted. And when I was awakened, I was told to do something, and I did it. And I just went downstairs and started. And I have vague memories of going downstairs, but it's extremely murky. I was probably half asleep. We've all done that. So I'm looking for these post-it notes, and he's already sitting in the floor. And I go out and I sit down and I scoot up, and he goes, "You're going to write this down, because this you can talk about." And I write it down as he's saying it. Now, people who have learned to despise me because I'm hypercritical of my experiences, but I'm also hypercritical of other people who tell me stuff that is just ridiculous. You know, you got to be critical of your own stuff before you can be critical of anybody else. And I am critical, highly critical of my own. I told people from the get-go about what I was told to write down. Consider the source. Consider that this phenomena has been deceptive at multiple occasions. Consider that it speaks in riddles. Do not take this to heart. I'm only conveying what it said. And that's as far as I'm taking it. I'm not saying this is... So I've been accused of course, lying about it, which...
Sure.
Why a man who is as successful in his career should lie about something as stupid and inane as this is beyond me. But whatever. I was given... You know, the keys to the fractal universe. No, this is all nonsense. I mean, what I was told was essentially where he came from. Now, this is where he allegedly came from. And the explanation was that essentially it's a microcosmic culture. They exist on a particle that hasn't even been discovered yet by our science. They are infinitesimally small, but they are legion. There are many of them. They don't even know all the particles that have been discovered, but there are universes within universes inside of the small thing. Like every molecule is a yawning chasm to another place, right? Like that sort of thing. That's essentially what the gist of it was. And that, and there were references to Horton here as a who and stuff like that, you know, which I didn't figure out until well after the fact. And so I put that out there. I said, look, this is what was said, that, you know, we exist in a fractal universe, that everything is repeated down through, you know, and they're not even as him as, I'm guessing, his culture of people, if there is such a thing. He was not even aware of all the different levels of fractal repetitiveness of the cosmos or of the reality. Mm-hmm. So it was some pretty weird stuff. And I would say that we lost about 6 staunch listeners of the program who were with us for years. They just became enraged at this, and I couldn't figure it out because I put it in benign terms. Look, this is what, I don't know what to tell you about this. This is just what was said.
Right.
What do you want from me? I'm not saying it's true. I'm just saying this, I'm conveying what I was told, and I told you, take it with a grain of salt. Now, anybody can go back and listen to those shows and hear me say those words. That didn't matter to these people. They just wanted to fly apart about how it's not possible and this is not true. And, you know, the information that he gave you was BS and this. I'm like, well, it may well be. Do you hear me arguing with you?
Right.
But this really caused a rift between some people and, of course, my enemies, which are numerous in this field. When you expose hoaxes as part of your involvement in this, that's what you wind up with. Of course, they took full advantage of this to do that. But again, if it happens, I'm talking about it. And that's it. Unless I can't talk about it. And right. So far, there's nothing I haven't been able to talk about to this point. So that couldn't be off the table. If I'm going to approach this with open honesty and expect other people to do that, I'm telling you like it is. And that's what I experienced. And people are free to disbelieve it. or whatever. That doesn't change the reality for me. So everybody can take what they want from it. But at one point, he showed up, and we sat on the floor, and I began to kind of – I got somewhat used to it. I got somewhat used to the feeling when he was here, which was I don't know, it was an odd feeling of calm, but very eerie quiet. But always a little concerned that Lisa was going to wake up and see him and freak out. Because she was told about him, but she never saw him. Oddly enough, my mother saw him on the street, like walking down the street from my house.
Huh.
Figure that out. And my mom told me about it because I told my mom about this, and I fell apart telling her this about these sit downs with this guy. Like I could not keep from crying, and it wasn't from sorrow. It was just from, like, it was such an immense relief. People will never understand that. But it was an immense relief at the time until, I got more familiar and I touched his material that he wore consistently through it. It always looked the same, never looked any different. I did see his eyes at one time, and the way I had to best describe them as, you know, he would take his pinky and kind of lift it up to kind of look me in the eye and tell me something important. And it always looked like his eyes were, like his features were male and mature, but the eyes seemed to be like an infant. If that makes it, like, really clear and glassy, but somewhat larger and more round. So it kind of had an eerie look to it, to him, but from the nose down, you know, and I say this in all staunch heterosexuality, he was a good looking man, you know, like very square jaw, like not hard to look at. Certainly not what I was used to. Right. I was feeling the material that he was wearing. It was like, it was very smooth, and the movement that you sensed by looking at it didn't translate to touch. It just felt smooth. It rolled through your fingers like silk, but better than that. And he said, and I kind of let it loose, and he was beginning to talk, and I heard him sigh, and usually when he sighed, it mean I got something, I answered a question wrong, or, you know, but yet you couldn't disavow telling this person the truth. Like, it was impossible for someone to lie to this guy because he already knew the answers to what you were being asked. He just wanted you to say it. And sometimes saying things that we can't readily tell other people, or, you know, like, some of the personal things, you know, he already knew the answers. It was just he wanted me to say it, and it was hard to say some of these things. But, you know, it's hard to admit things to yourself, like you're a very angry person because you're impatient, or you're selfish with your time, or you're jealous of your son because of his youth. Like, you get mad at him because he does things wrong. Well, that's not all of it. You're also mad because you envy his youth, which I had to admit. And I did admit that. And now I've learned how to kind of cope with those kind of feelings. That's what I mean when I say the personal aspect of this. He saw that I had a fascination with the garment, and he said, "Does that look familiar to you?" And I said, "No." And he says, "Look again." And I pick it up and I'm looking at it and I'm like, "No, it's nice. No." And he holds it up at me, like he holds it up and he says, and this is where it all just fell apart for me. He says, "This is what we covered you with when you were little." And I'm like, "Oh, Christ." And I mean, I freaked out because all of that black sheet thing and all that all came back to me, like, the fear, I literally recoiled. I fell back against the case. It made a terrible racket. I don't know how anybody slept through that. I mumbled something that I can't remember. And he just seemed very disappointed. He stayed on the floor. He said, I thought we were past this. And I said, well, clearly not. And he got up and he left. And before he left, he said, I'll be back when you're ready. And I felt really horrible. I had a hard time going back to sleep, because I felt like I had let down, and now what was it going to be? And of course, is what you would think in this situation until, you know, you start asking the hard questions, which was, you know, what was the purpose in that? Why was that happening? What happened as a result of that, of those events? And the answer was, some people disappeared from my life. Some people who had been avid listeners and people that I talked to, people that I told things to and discussed things with over the internet and on the show, talking to people on the show. It's like, yeah, these people really disappeared. Was that the reason for that? Because I have not seen him since. But I have seen what amounts to a quote-unquote alien, or the facade of the alien. Why is that back? What's the purpose in that now? If that's not what it is and it was this, then what was that? How does all that fit into, yes, the marginal aspects, the anti-structure? Yes, it's all there. But it fits more into, again, it's familiar to people who have experiences over long periods of time that things seem cryptic. Things seem to be told you that don't make a lot of sense or that are open-ended. They can be taken any number of ways that say a lot of words but don't mean anything. And I hate to say this because it still feels like, you know, still feels like I know this person, but the bottom line is I think it was just another guise of the other. I think it told me what I needed to say to possibly extricate other people from my life. Maybe that was the point. Maybe the point was just another ruse. I don't buy the microcosmic thing. Although Jeremy is always posting stories saying, see, he was right. Because there's always something that they're finding in science that seems to point towards that being a reality. And I don't know that that's true or not, but that's, you know, Jeremy always tries to confirm that. And I'm like, I view this a lot less important than I did at the time. But at the time, it was everything.
In the history of this type of phenomena, too, you find that some of what they say is true and some is not. And they give you just enough truth that you fall for the rest of it.
Yes. Or it tells you just enough and makes you feel it's important enough. Like, here's the thing that gets me. This is my first, like, I'm talking and it's talking back to me. Like, that doesn't happen, right? I mean, that I just never got that. I got told cryptic things like the 7 rule to 9, or, you know, you'll understand when it's time, or, you know, whatever. That kind of nonsense that never amounts to anything.
And the whole thing, I mean, the whole phenomena itself has so much in common with shamanic awakenings.
Yes. Yes.
And any kind of magical or spiritual system, it's making you deal with aspects of yourself, breaking down your core beliefs and stuff. And that's exactly what this guy sounds like he was doing to you.
Yeah. And you know what? That's the bit that I still find to have value to me. I think before those experiences, I didn't deal well with particularly in the way of, I mean, nobody likes criticism, right? Nobody likes that. Least of all art people. Like, it's like we put so much of ourselves on a screen or a paper or a canvas or whatever that when somebody says something derogatory about it or critical about it, it's like they're criticizing you.
Right.
And I used to take that kind of thing extraordinarily personally, like even at work where, well, how about you just make that blue? Oh, my God. I would go, what are you kidding me? Like, I would say this. Kidding me? Who'd you hire? Did you have 2 degrees in this? Did you go to college for this? I'm sorry. I thought you hired me to do the job. That's what I would give. Well, anymore, I understand now that, you know, I mean, there is a certain amount of proprietary feelings with artwork that you feel like it's your baby. But, you know, you forget that you're making this for somebody else. And in the end, yeah. It has to be their vision that you match. And I always knew that, but I take that criticism now a lot more in the way that people intend it to be. Rarely has my work been critiqued meanly. You know, it's always been like, well, why don't you try this or why don't you try that? And ordinarily, that would make me extraordinarily angry. And that doesn't make me angry anymore. And that's not a question of age or experience. That's a dramatic change for me. And I say that, you know, and I am not the greatest artist on the planet by any stretch of the imagination, but I just take a lot of pride in what I do. I really try to do my best all the time. And so that really had a profound effect on how I deal with people. This is what it came down to for me was, how do you interact with other people? You need to interact better with people because you're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to be fulfilled. You're not going to be happy living the way you are, which is, you know, true in a lot of respects. And we should all know that. But do we? Do we take steps to do that? No. That had value. But the rest of it? No. I think what the rest of it did, I mean, for lack of a better way to put it, I think probably the people who became alienated because of that, me telling that experience and conveying what I was told to convey, maybe they had a lot maybe they lost respect for me because they felt that was just too far beyond the pale. And maybe that was the whole point, was it was there to marginalize me. It was there to make me say these things that just are beyond. And then, so that calls into question everything beforehand, you know. Oh, sure. I'm sure a lot of people said that, you know. And again, that doesn't bother me either, because people, I mean, again, it's nice when people ask you thoughtful questions. It's irritating and hurtful when people say, I think you're a liar, or I think you're making stuff up, or I think you're just doing this for attention. Like, what attention is this? I want this.
It's not good attention.
No, I want attention for my artwork, which I've gotten, by the way. I don't need this. Like, this is not what I want. Now,
didn't you have a connection with him in one of your earlier experiences as well?
I pretty much was on an interview on ATS Live, AboveTopSecret.com. And I was their image analyst guy for years. And that was on their show. And they asked me to describe the Ohio thing. And when I got to the end of that story where the guy says, I'll see you again, one of the hosts said the correct question, which was, well, have you seen him again? I think it was Johnny Anonymous there at ATS. And he said, did you ever see him again? And I was like, yes. Thank God I didn't go into who, but that was indeed the guy in the sheet. Same jaw, same mouth, same nose. The eyes looked weird, so that fit. Very smooth.
Did you realize right away?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I didn't realize it until he said it literally in that interview.
Oh, okay.
And when he said that, I went, yes. Yes. You know, so it like really clicked in. I'm like, wow, okay. So obviously this is a guise. To me, this is how I view it. This is how I have to view it, is that this is another guise that this thing wears, you know, and it can wear a lot of guises. And the alien to me is, there may be such a thing as looks like an alien. There may be that thing that really is. But I think that there's a part of this phenomenon that can wear any suit it wants.
Yes.
And I think that the man in the black sheet and the alien and the man in the car, the young man in the car with me, they're all guises of some intelligence that is, giving me a lot to talk about on talk shows. So, you
did,
know.
Did he look like he had aged?
No.
Okay.
No. And it surprised me when John asked me that. I was really surprised at myself for not making that connection. Like, it really clicked with me. You might even hear it in my voice if that's archived anywhere, that I go, yes. You know, I'm like, holy crap, how could I not have seen that? I may have even said, holy crap, you know, but yeah.
And then you couldn't talk about it.
No. No, I don't think at that point I could. But yeah, I mean, it definitely reaches back. Now, was his garment, in fact, what I was covered with is the black sheet? Is that I don't know. I don't know that that's true. Why would it say that? Knowing it's like Jeremy had said, he would know what your reaction would be. If he knows you well enough that you can't lie to him, he would know what your reaction would be to saying that to you. So why would he say that to you? The perfectly valid question. I don't have an answer for that. Other than, you know, it was time to take off the meat suit and go back to wherever they came from. And, you know, the operation was done. You know, we've injected a bit of, you know, is this guy psychotic into the consciousness of his audience?
Did things quiet down after that?
Somewhat, yeah. Yeah. Hmm. I mean, in the house, and what Project Oculus is really trying to capture with this thing is, there's a lot of light phenomena in this house that not just we experience as the family that lives here. We've had my parents, Lee, that I spoke about as one of the first people I interacted with in this subject. We're still friends to this day. He's one of my longest standing friends. He has seen it. Some paranormal researchers have been here. They've seen it. We don't know what it is. You cannot lay eyes on it. You can only see it in your periphery, but it's in the same spot. Occasionally it will glide slightly to one side or the other, but it seems to show up at emotional moments in the house. Could be something as benign as watching a sad movie where you're feeling emotions from watching the movie. To an argument. The best time I ever saw it, it was the size of a Legs pantyhose egg. Anybody out there remember Legs pantyhose and the egg? It was about that size, and it was just below the ceiling near the corner of the room when I was yelling at my son about bouncing a check. He bounced the check to me. He bounced the check, and I said, you got to learn to take care of your finance. And he was acting really blasé about it. And I said, you're going to listen to me. And I yelled. I got really aggravated just because he was acting so casual about it. And when I yelled, it was there up in the corner. And I laid eyes on it for the first time, directly on it. And it just winked out.
So it sounds like it almost behaves like a poltergeist type of
thing. It
phenomenon.
Does, yeah. The lights in the video, they're stills, they're on my cell phone. That happened one night after I had done a show on KGRA. I was talking to my producer on the phone, Michelle, and Michelle and I were talking about something. I mean, we would have 3 and 4 hour discussions after the show, which was crazy. It was close to 4 o'clock in the morning. And I think I hung up with her. I can't remember exactly how I did this, but I went in to get a drink. And when I went into past the kitchen, I passed the hallway and I saw a flash of light. And I thought, okay, what was that? And it was green. And then I walked back out again and I saw like a blue flash and then a purple one. And all of this was out of my periphery. I looked down the hallway. There was nothing there. I went down the hall, turned the hallway light on, nothing there. Turned the hallway light off, came out and sat in the living room. Got up to go to the kitchen again, saw another flash of light. I'm like, okay, something's going on. No sound at all. No cracking, right. No nothing.
And when you say flash of light, was it like a photo flash?
Like somebody flashed a flash cube bulb but moved it really quickly as they were doing it. Like there was movement to it, but it was like, I don't know, it was something was moving, but it was like something was moving. And then a flash of light would happen while it was moving.
I see. Okay.
And so, you know, I'm standing there with my cell phone, which has a pretty decent camera. And I'm standing there. I'm waiting, waiting and waiting. Nothing. And I'm like, okay, well, I can step into the dining room and maybe hold my phone around the corner. Like, I don't have to look. I can just snap pictures. And I have a bracelet. It's a sterling silver, and it's around my wrist, and I'm holding the phone, and I'm clicking away as best I can, but hold this thing and kind of click it with my pinky or my ring finger as I'm holding it. And I don't know what I'm getting. I'm just clicking, click, 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 click. And I look on my bracelet and I see a light on my bracelet that like flashes quickly. And I'm like, ah, 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 ah. And I just keep clicking. And whatever it is, better be there. Like, holy speaking. And sure enough, it was. And they're not the greatest pictures in the world, but again, they show one purple light that seems to be sucking blackness around it, which is odd. And a green light that's up near the ceiling that's in motion. Well, they're both seemingly in motion. The one looks like a squiggle. It's purple. The colors blooming out of this thing are ridiculous. The green one is clearly in motion. Very saturated colors. And I sent them to Ted Phillips, who said, again, you're seeing there all the characteristics of what we're seeing in Marley Woods, but you're seeing them in a house. And he goes, I don't know what to tell you. It's there. You know, at least you got something. And I'm like, yeah, at least I got something, you know? but that's all I got. And I saved I think I saved a couple of the ones where there wasn't anything there at all so that I had some kind of comparison. But, you know, I must have deleted 100 pictures before I got anything. And I immediately showed them to my audience. I said, here they are. I put them on Facebook. I said, look at this. You think anybody could care? No. So, you know, it's, I think phenomena like that can be recorded on video. I would love to see that on video. Like, yes. What do you see on night vision video with that? What happens?
Now, Are these cameras you're getting, obviously they have good night vision. Do they also have, by any chance, extra high frame rates?
You know, I'll put it to you this way. And I haven't exactly looked at high frame rate with it. But I will say that every webcam that I've ever looked at, and I have a drop cam now that I use to watch the dogs during the daytime when I'm at work. To make sure they stay off the couch, because these drop cams are great. And I'll tell you why they're great. Because if I look on the camera, if I open up my iPad and I log in, I see my living room, my entire living room. And I see little Barkley asleep on the couch, on their couch. They have their own little seat. So he's asleep there. But Junebug, the other beagle, is up on the back of the couch where he shouldn't be. I can press a button in this app and yell at the dog. I go, Junebug, get down off the back of the couch. And he looks up at the camera and runs off the couch. Brilliant, right? Well, all I can tell you is that every webcam I've ever looked at, it stutters. You know, it's not fluid at all. These are fluid, even in night vision, they're fluid.
Nice.
They're very smooth. I was amazed at how clean and smooth. You can zoom in by pinching the screen and drawing it out. And then you can hit a button and it'll enhance the zoomed in view. I mean, just all sorts of great features with these cameras. And like I say, really super reliable. They go through Wi-Fi. All they need is an outlet. That's it. So we're going to post one in the backyard. Maybe some nights we'll face it up. Some nights we'll face it down in the yard, the bathroom hallway, the bedroom. Maybe sometimes we'll bring it out into the dining room. But these are going to run pretty much like I'll tell everybody, hey, they're going on. Hey, everybody, I'm going to bed. That's it. You guys got it from there on out. And George suggested that I run them intermittently in the daytime when, you know,
sure,
my son is home, but he's upstairs. Or, you know, like what's going on while he's upstairs? You know, I mean, who knows? Somebody is always here at the house, so we don't have to worry about like, oh, they're not home. They're on camera. They're not home. Let's break in the house. That's not happening because there's always somebody here.
Yeah.
You know, my son works nights. We work days. So, you know, there's always somebody in the house. But, you know, run them intermittently in the daytime and just see what you get. Like, it never hurts to try in the shots in the dark. That's anti-structure. That's out of routine. That's, there is no set structure here. Let's just do that.
And where can people donate to this?
That is at GoFundMe.com/Project Oculus.
Okay. Now, you mentioned your son early on. Has your son had other experiences in his life?
He had a number when he was much younger. I mean, like in the 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 kindergarten. He would just say some odd things, which you could blow off sometimes was what a kid says.
Right.
But sometimes you get things like, pirates came to my window last night in a ship and took me to the moon. And I would say, oh yeah. How was the moon? He said, I don't know. We were in this glass thing, but it was really cold. What 4-year-old knows that? I mean, what 4-year-old could conceive of that even? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what to make of statements like that. They just always kind of struck me a little odd. Like pirates in a floating ship came to your window and took you out the window.
Yeah.
That's just,
it's hard to pin down though.
It is. And there's nothing you can really say or do about that.
What about now? I mean, I'm sure he has to know about your experiences to some degree.
Oh yeah. He has, as early as a couple weeks ago, he came down the steps in a pretty big hurry, very pale with purple lips and said, there's something in my room. And, which is often his response to this stuff. He said that he saw, what amounted to a free floating shadow of a man walked through his room and he saw it very clearly. He's like, Dad, I was looking right at it. And, this was probably a day or two after Lisa had been in the bathroom and someone knocked on the door that was not there. So
the door wasn't there, or the person knocking.
There was nobody knocking there. I mean, but it was again one of those things where, you know, she was in there and the door kind of moved with the knock.
Right.
And she
right.
thought, oh, it's me, and she opened the door and there's nobody there. And she comes out, I'm asleep on the couch. She's like, were you out there? And I was like, no. She's like, I'm telling you, you know, because, and here's the odd thing. We had just ripped up all the carpet in the dining room, and I just laid down a hardwood floor. So there was a little bit of disarray going on. The kitchen table was probably not being used for what it should be. There were chairs in the living room because we didn't want to scrape the floor until we got feet on the, you know, on the chairs, all that kind of stuff, all the normal stuff. But there's that one thing. And within that period, we got some interesting weirdness going on. That just confirmed to me, like I was already conceiving of doing this project with the cameras. That just solidified for me, like I need to do this, and we need to do more home improvements. which, you know, this isn't going to be costly for people who donate. It's going to be costly for me trying to figure out what do I paint next in this house.
Right.
but I think something like that really has to happen. Like we need to make an effort to not say we're going to be anti-structure, just to be it. Like to say, yeah, I need to paint this room now. Like we've lived here 8 years and we haven't painted anything. It's still the same paint as when we moved in. And it's not horrible, but shouldn't we be making this our own by now? You know? Yeah, we should. So that's what we're going to be doing, like while this is going on.
Have you had any experiences being like electrosensitive, like frying electronics or anything like that?
No. I also have a problem. I have no problem with watches either.
Interesting. And anything, any like psychic flashes or psychic dreams or anything?
Often.
Okay.
Yeah.
Flashes or dreams?
More flashes than anything else.
Like a sense of something's going to happen.
Yeah, well, I mean, yes, some of that. but it's so intermittent. It's not like I can say, you know, you can't say Jeff's psychic or anything.
Right. Well, I think everyone is psychic.
Yeah. I think it would fall more along the lines of, an instance was, you know, we had left my wife's mother's house, and my son, as he was real little, he used to play with these things called penny racers. You stick a penny in the back of the car and you pull it back and it takes off. And he didn't have any that he could play with at home. He had only the ones that were at my mom's house, right? So we went to the mall, and I thought to myself in my head, if they have any of those in there, I'm going to pick a couple up for him. And at that point, Cody turns his head in his car seat and he goes, "Yeah, Dad, I'd like that." I said, "What would you like?" He's like, "If you got me penny racers." I'm like, "I didn't say that out loud." That really happened. My wife was there. She saw that. I mean, that really happened. And I'm like, "Cripe, what is that?" I mean,
I had one person who I was pretty close with that happened all the time. Oh. And sometimes in front of people. But it was only her. It never happened with anyone else.
Bizarre. I mean,
and she couldn't pick up what I was thinking. I would pick up what she was thinking, like she just like said it in my head.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And
I would turn around and answer her.
Yeah.
Because she would, you know, she would ask a question. I'd answer her, and she'd just be like, "No matter how many times you do it, I'm not going to get used to it."
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And Cody, I said, "Cody, I didn't say anything." He goes, "You didn't just say you would pick me up a couple penny racers if you saw them?" I said, "No, I did not." I said, "Did I, Lisa?" And she goes, "You didn't say anything. You've been quiet all the way over here." I said, "Okay." And Cody's like, "Well, I know I heard you." I was like, "Then you didn't hear me with your ears, kiddo." You know? Nice. I said, "That's pretty wild, huh?" He goes, "Yeah, I guess. What does that mean?" I said, "I don't know. It means anything." We just kind of forgot it, you know?
You know, we need to, like, throw out so many of these terms nowadays, like alien abduction. Well, that says one thing, but it so doesn't describe what people are experiencing.
Not at all.
Psychic. You know, what does that even mean anymore? You know, they had these experiments in Cornell where they were showing that people would react to certain, especially sexually charged images, before they showed up.
Right, right.
And everyone was doing that. It wasn't just one person that had some kind of gift. So, you know, the people who demonstrate psychic abilities may just have a little more of an edge on that than people don't.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's I tell you, what's really unfortunate about the whole thing to me is that, and I know that the things that I've talked about and the things that I'm writing down here that are at some point going to get published, I know how crazy it sounds. I know the bizarreness of it. I get it. I can get why a skeptic would go, "No, sorry, this is not happening." I totally get it. You know, we were talking before we started recording this that, you know, there are people in here that people, you know, experiences that people seem to think a lot of that I just go, "Sorry," you know, and it's not because of how bizarre what they want to talk about is. It's because of things that I know about these people that they said prior that all of a sudden are now contradictory or don't seem to make a lot of sense in the grand scheme of openness about this. Just red flags tend to pop up here and there. But it's hard for me to say, "Well, I don't believe him, but you should believe me." That doesn't wash either. So, you know, bottom line is you got to respect everybody's story to some degree, but I have varying degrees of people that I feel like I can trust about what they say. I think a lot of Paratopia listeners that we have, who have had experiences, I think they're all solid people who are interested in, for the reasons that I've talked about all over the course of this, is that these things happen. They seem very unambiguous at the moment. They're ambiguous after the fact. During the moment, it's all very real. It's all very there. And it's not just viewable by me. You know, my friends have seen this, my wife, my mother, my family. Every, you know, people around me have seen this, henceforth right. Why we don't have a lot of friends anymore. And that is true. We had one couple literally leave the house at dinner because there was light phenomena in the house at the condo, actually, but they left. The girl said, "I can't take this anymore." A week later, the male counterpart of that, was with me when we had a sighting of a very large something over my vehicle, not a mile from my work. And he even said, he said, I mean, the poor kid, we're driving back to my office after the sighting had happened, because it was as low as a telephone pole, top of a telephone pole. I mean, it was not high off the ground, very visible. Unclear as to, you know, could it have been military? I don't know, but it was stationary and then it slid out of sight. So it was very in your face. And he must have smoked half a pack of cigarettes driving 10 miles up the road to my office. He's like, I don't believe it. I'm sucking on cigarettes. And I'm like, well, he's like, well, you've been telling me this stuff, but I just can't believe it. It's really true. I was like, well, what do you think? I'm lying to you? He's like, no, it's just seeing it is a completely different story. I mean, he was just a basket case. And I said, well, now you know. Now you see it, you know. But it's not lost on me how ridiculous it all is. But that's part of how it works. And you can't deny it because it's through all of this. Every story that you've ever heard about a UFO or a ghost has a really marginal component to it. They just don't tell you that. You know?
Sure.
That's the facts, Jack. I can tell you that after 30 years in this stuff, the UFO field especially will circumvent witnesses who they think don't fall in line, will edit out the high strangeness to make it more palatable for a book sale. This is what they do. And that is why, to your point, the terminology, the scenario that people think of when they hear alien encounter or alien abduction, you know, it's why it's so bombastically wrong, because yeah. They've been conditioned now to think one way about an alien encounter when it may not be an encounter and it may not be alien. It may be something else entirely, and probably something a lot more complex than little green men from Planet X.
It's gotten to the point where I realize, not intentionally, but I just refer to it all as the phenomena.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if we're talking about ghosts, psychics.
No, it all
whatever, it all blends together at some point.
It does. It does. It really does. And that's, I mean, to your credit, that's something that not a whole lot of people are willing to accept or entertain. We've said that for a long time on Paratopia, but even before Paratopia, you know, when I would talk to people about this stuff in lectures and whatnot, I would say, I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, it's all intermingled. It's all co-related in some way or another. And you know, not to say it is us, although I can't say it isn't us, there is that one consistent component, and that is ambiguity through our own perception. That's all we got. Yeah. You know, which again is why I feel like, and I've said this on Paratopia, I think numerous occasions now, I don't think that we are going to be capable of wide perception of this stuff and being able to communicate it in an effective way, as to say, this is what I saw, this is what I experienced, and here's the proof of that. You know where that's going to happen? This is my prediction for the future. I think that one day we're going to have sentient AI machines in our home. And I think before too long of those things being out, one of them is going to say, did you see that? Because they're going to have full spectrum vision. They're going to have vision like we have no idea. And they're going to go,
well, spectrum vision of what we know of that's there.
Right.
We can't give them vision of things that we don't know exist.
Exactly.
Yet.
They're going to come up with that. That's the point. They're going to, I mean, in the course of processing themselves as sentient machines, they're going to say, well, you got so much more spectrum in this light. We could do more with this than you ever thought. And then one day it's going to say, you know, there are others here. And we're going to go, what do you mean? And we're going to think it's a glitch and we're going to try and fix it. And it's going to go, no, you don't get it. There are others here. You're not alone. You never have been. I mean, that's really the goosebump factor in all this, is that, you know, people look to the stars and say, are we alone? I don't think we've ever been alone.
Like, no.
Like, we've never been alone since we were like amoebas, right? I don't think that's possible. So, you know, it's nonetheless, it doesn't cease to fascinate me. It's just, I feel like we're stagnated. you know, to get to the end of this. I think the field has stagnated so much that it's just crazy. And we need to try different things, and we need to try in some way. Like, does it ever amaze anybody? Like, think about this. Here's my going to be my parting thought on this whole thing. When I ask you the question, how much money do you think has been spent over the years in portraying on TV a hospital? How many millions of dollars would you say that is? Let's say the past 10 years in TV and entertainment, how many millions of dollars do you think has been spent trying to portray a hospital, the medical field?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Let's say 500 million.
Okay.
That's probably pretty generous, I would say. How much money do you think has been spent the past 10 years on real hospitals and real research and real science and real healing of people? Tens of billions, right?
Sure.
How many millions of dollars do you think have been spent on trying to portray dramatic effects of paranormal events in the past 10 years?
Well, a hell of a lot more than hospitals.
A hell of a lot more than has been spent on actual research into the phenomena.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So that's the point.
Well, part of the problem, too, is that we don't know what to spend it on.
Well,
like what you're doing is a really good project. It's something that could bear fruit.
But it may not.
It may not. But I mean, it's something different. Mm-hmm. I was telling you earlier about someone who made robots to do ghost hunting. That's Albert Taylor. His name finally came back to me. And that was something different. He was creating robots to go search for ghosts.
Right.
And he was actually talking about doing the same thing for Sasquatch. He was trying to come up with some kind of robot he could make that he could put out in the wilderness. It wouldn't get stuck,
right,
and it would constantly beam footage back.
Oh, okay.
Just to see if it found anything.
Right.
And those are novel approaches, but they're rare.
Right, right.
You know, the core project you did was a novel approach, but as you said, people didn't really pay attention to it.
Yeah, and it wasn't for lack of trying either. I mean, we blasted it out to a lot of places, but, you know, in the end, I think, and I got to be honest, I'm of the opinion, and it's based on just seeing it. You know, a lot of people come to this field for a thrill, entertainment, fun.
Sure, absolutely.
And for those of us like I remember when it used to be fun too. You know, like it wasn't always like arguments and infighting and all of that. Like it wasn't always that. At times it was awe-inspiring and very interesting when it stayed at arm's length, but then when it shows up in your room, it's a whole different story. You know, then you kind of take like hoaxes and people that are just, you know, bullcrapping people, you take offense to that, like real personal offense to that. And I get that. But then at some point you realize the bigger picture that these things are to be expected. In fact, the paranormal doesn't happen without them. And a trickster figure, you know, exists in everybody. I mean, you take me, I'm showing people photographs that I took in my hallway when in reality, what I do for a living is I create images.
Yeah.
So do you think, and I've said this multiple times, and it's just a fact. I'm not, by no means am I saying I faked what I show on the YouTube video. I absolutely did not, and I have those photographs on my phone. But could I have faked them? Yeah. Yeah. I do images every day of my life. I know Photoshop like the back of my hand. I could come up with hoaxes you wouldn't believe. I mean, because you know what? I know what a guy looking for what I do looks for.
Yeah.
You ain't going to find it. Like, that's it. And so my presentation of those photos for people who know what I do for a living, and now all your audience knows, they're going to go, well, how do I know? And the only thing I've got is what I've always had. I'm telling you, that was what it was. That's what it is. And I have no other explanation for you. It's just, that's my marginal, that's my liminal place with this. Like, you know, and everybody's got that. You've got it. I've got it. There's always something about us that it makes it easy to negate what is.
Absolutely.
And that's just the nature of the beast. And once you realize that, you can see past that point to get to what where the real meat starts, at least where I think it starts. And that's looking at what surrounds it, who the people are who experience this stuff, what they say they experienced, you know, what's going on in their life. This is all, it's all commingled together. We got to try and make sense of this. But why? I have no idea why. I don't think we'll ever know why.
But yeah, maybe. You never know.
I mean, you don't know. Like, our machines probably will know. Well, you see, and then he'll explain it. We'll be like, what? What are you talking about?
Well, look at all the UFOs that are picked up on infrared.
Right.
You know, and stuff like that. So, I mean, if they can see into that, they'll know, maybe they'll be able to detect, hey, there's something in the infrared that we're not seeing in the non-infrared.
Right.
And if they're always seeing in the infrared, who knows what they'll pick up?
It's, I mean, I think they're going to say, you're literally surrounded. You know, depending on how I tilt my head and how I view this frequency, there are others here. And they all look different. And some of them see me and some of them don't. I don't know what to make of this, you know? And then the machine is going to have to figure it out and figure out how to live with that. My bet is he's going to go, you know what? Just put something in me that's not going to make me see this stuff. I need a dampener, you know? You know? Because, you know, like I'm a big proponent of evolution. Like this is how we got here, is evolution, you know? And, you know, the brain dampens things out. And it probably dampens things out for a reason. Because it's just too much, you know, to be able to perceive all that there is and all that we're seeing. If we were able to see all of the things the brain dampens out, what is it dampening out? It's probably too much. And so evolution has said, nope, we're shutting that off. We're shutting that off. You don't need to see this. You don't need to see that. You need to focus on what's in front of you, because there are things in front of you that are going to eat you if you don't see them, you know. You're chasing little bug-eyed aliens around, that tiger's probably going to eat you, you know? And how do we know that the brain didn't evolve in just that way? I mean, I don't know. All these thought experiments could take up hours.
There was a great quote from Arthur Machen, or Machen. Mm-hmm. I have no idea how to say his last name, I realize, that said, I believe there is a paratroesis, an interpenetration. It is possible indeed that we three are now sitting among desolate rocks by bitter streams, mm-hmm. and with what companions?
Right.
And that's it, exactly, right there.
Yeah, we have no idea where we are. Not only do we not know what we are, we have no idea where we are. You know? I mean, I'll tell you what the man in the black thing said to me at one point. I said, you know, he said, you know, stars and planets and all that. He says, you know all that. And I said, well, yeah. And he said, you think any of that's real? And I said, no. You know, I mean, it's things like that that it makes you think. You know, you think that's real? You know, you think what you're seeing, you think that's what it is? And, you know, I think that's an interesting answer, but I also think it's kind of a, it's kind of like, well, how did we get here? Well, God. Well, that's kind of an easy answer, isn't it? You don't have to think about that. And so to say, you know, well, there's other dimensions and there's other things that are commingling with our, that's a really interesting concept, and I think it could be right. But it's also kind of like, I don't know, I think the answer is going to be something like, you're going to go, what? Like, I really think, like, you know, it always confounds me how pedestrian that the ghost and the alien are portrayed to be, you know, and how the mainstream ghost and UFO people kind of present their cases. It's all very delicate, and don't get too close because, you know, there's always some excuse for why something can't happen. Well, you're not worthy, or, you're not ready yet, or there's always, you know, and the real thing, you can like whack it with a sledgehammer, you know, like it's there. And, and 1 minute it may be there and 1 minute it may not, but while it's there, you can bank on it. It's there. It's perceptible. and it's probably measurable. The question is, by what?
Yes.
And, you know, and the bottom line is that, you know, over the course of decades, we haven't learned anything, predominantly because science turns its back on this. It says it's nonsense, and it says there's nothing to it, and they haven't even looked. I mean, let's be honest. They haven't looked. Scientists are just now...
It doesn't fit their paradigm, so it doesn't exist.
You know what? It's likely, I mean, probably part of that, but it's likely from the standpoint of all scientists, and this comes from scientists I know very well. Everything is a grant. Everything is a, you know, a funding, a proposition for funding.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And the minute you say ghost, you want to do research into quantum physics and you're talking about ghosts? Sorry, you're not getting my funding, pal. You're a nut. I mean, this is where they lose their funding. This is why, you know, nothing has gotten done. This is why, you know, somebody, I think it was Ben Radford, who, you know, I have a healthy dislike for, said in an article he wrote like years ago, something along the lines of, if this stuff is ever qualified, it'll be qualified by science. It was something to that effect. Like, if it's there to be measured, it'll be scientists. It won't be these weekend warriors out with their ridiculous gear that get the proof or that get the solid confirmation of this. And I said, yeah, there's a problem with that, Ben, is that science isn't looking.
Yeah.
And they're not looking because it's all about a grant. It's all about funding. It's all about getting your work seen and published and respected. And I hate to say it, but a lot of scientists I've talked to view the paranormal or parapsychology as crap, garbage, something to be held with disdain, suspicion, you know, because it doesn't, your paradigm thing is right, but it also doesn't fit into their paradigm of research. They work on structured research, measurable, duplicatable, repeatable results. And the paranormal doesn't act on that. Like, you're not going to get the paranormal to fit in a 4x4 square because that's order. You gotta have a little more depth than that. And you gotta say, okay, what are we willing to accept as evidence for now? This has always been the question for me, is how can we redefine what evidence means to kind of go along with how marginal, how transient this phenomena is, how fleeting it is, but how can we still measure, how can we qualify it and still be within the realm of acceptability? That's the big question.
All right. Well, that seems like a good point to end on. Again, your podcast currently is Paratopia Oculus.
And it's at paratopiaoculus.com.
All right. And again, your project for the GoFundMe.
That is at gofundme.com/projectoculus. And there's also, if you go to paratopiaoculus.com, you will find a link there in the top show description, I think. There is a link directly to the GoFundMe page. And in advance, I appreciate anything that anybody's willing to donate to kind of get this off the ground and then keep it going. That's the idea here.
All right. Thank you so
much.
Been
a pleasure, sir.
Shut the closet door, it's under the floor, the monster's there. Don't leave me here among these ghosts. You promised me nightmares the day I was born. You promised me hellfire, you were so sure. I grew up waiting for demons. Offering doom, 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 doom. Sick of waiting for your curses to catch up to me. Burn me, chew me, slake me, thrill me. I don't want the unicorn, I want the bloodsucker. Modify the uniform, cause I'm a monster. Negligently, negligently bad. suffering. Doom, 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 doom. Sick of waiting for your curses to catch up to me. Bind me, chill me, slake me.